All right, I'm now joined by Matt Markevich, Managing Director of the Cannabis ETF, ticker symbol THCX. This just launched over the summer, and we're going to go in-depth on the cannabis space this week with Matt, who is now on the line with us from New York. Matt, great having you back on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
So, Matt, let's just jump right in. I want to have you spotlight the ETF itself, and then we can get into everything happening with cannabis stocks right now and certainly the longer-term opportunities. So take us through THCX. How is this constructed?
Sure. THCX is a passively managed ETF. So it tracks an index, and it is listed on the New York Stock Exchange. It is a portfolio that rebalances monthly. It is a what's called a modified market cap methodology, meaning that the larger stocks will have a larger weighting in the portfolio. However, at rebalance time, a stock's weight is capped at 8%. In addition, we have a minimum market cap for index eligibility of U.S. $100 million.
So in terms of the specific holdings, give us some detail here. What exactly does this hold?
Right now, there are 37 stocks in the portfolio. 75% of the stocks are listed in the United States. 25% are listed up in Canada. There are what's called licensed producers. So these are the companies that are allowed by the government of Canada to grow and distribute marijuana. There are 19 of those within the portfolio. There are also companies involved in the extraction of cannabis distillates and other products. Generally, those are Canadian companies as well, so they're not growing and not distributing. They're almost a middleman to a certain extent, taking out the distillates that are going to be used in edibles and vape products when those sales start in Canada in December. We also have several ancillary companies in the portfolio, including Scotts Miracle-Gro, makes a lot of equipment for the cannabis industry, both in the U.S. and in Canada, temperature controls, lighting, grow mats, those sorts of equipment. We have a couple companies that are, focused on ancillary equipment from the perspective of drying the flower and, helping to bring a more biosecure environment to the drying process, because that's always an issue from not only a safety perspective, but a time perspective. We have a couple companies in the portfolio that are solely focused on international markets, mainly Latin America and in Europe. And we have four biotech companies in the portfolio that are developing cannabis-based medicines, including one, GW Pharmaceuticals, which has the only FDA-approved drug that is based on cannabis.
Now, there are no alcohol or tobacco companies included here, correct?
Correct. No alcohol or tobacco stocks in the portfolio for a couple of reasons. One, this is a pure play ETF, so we want to give investors access to, this growing industry by including companies that only, that have leverage to the industry, direct leverage. And also, the fact of the matter is, cannabis is taking market share from tobacco and alcohol, and it's being used in a replacement in a lot of situations from a recreational usage. And I don't really want to invest in stocks that are in a slow growth, defensive, dividend paying industry. This is a high growth, albeit higher volatility portfolio, but investors expect it to be growth stocks, growth oriented. And also, most of as we've seen in the past, the cannabis companies are going to be takeout targets or investment targets from the larger consumer products companies, say like a Constellation Brands. I'd rather own the companies that are going to be bought, not the companies that are going to be paying the fat premium. So from that perspective, the smaller cap, more cannabis-focused companies are the ones that I really want to concentrate on here.
What about owning U.S. multi-state operators? So I know one of the other cannabis ETFs is taking this approach. They're using swaps to gain exposure to U.S. pot producers that trade on Canadian exchanges or over-the-counter. Is this something THCX would ever consider?
We're not doing it currently. We don't own we have no exposure to the multi-state operators, as you cited. It's something that, from feedback we've gotten from investors, they're not comfortable with the use of derivatives in the portfolio. And although, per the prospectus, it's allowed, It's not something that, you know, we've really gotten great reception from a lot of advisors who, you know, just are looking for more. They just want the stock listings. They don't want to have to worry about, oh, is there counterparty risk within those swaps? How will it affect the price movement of the portfolio if there's cash held as collateral against those instruments? So it's not something that we have, again, in the portfolio right now, and we don't have any plans to in the future. Again, that can always change, but we feel the more, the safer route is to just give people a replication of the index via stocks.
What was the rationale for going index-based here? Again, looking at a couple of the other cannabis ETFs, two of them are actively managed. And I know the argument for active management here is that this is such a rapidly evolving space. You need to be nimble, be able to pivot quickly, right? So why go index-based?
In our experience as portfolio managers over the years, it's our view that taking a very rules-based approach to managing a portfolio is probably the better way to go, because it takes a lot of the emotion out of it. As you alluded to, this is a very volatile, fast-moving space. And, almost like we've never seen before. Maybe, in the internet stocks in the late 90s could be comparable. But we want to avoid making decisions just based purely on emotion here. And having that rules-based process, in our view, is the better way to approach this sector. In addition, there's not much research coverage and information out on these available on these stocks right now. And because of that, we have a patent-pending process whereby we use a natural language processing algorithm to look at media sentiment. So we're actually using this AI-backed technology like we've used in our other portfolios to help give a sentiment overlay to the portfolio. So that helps, again, develop a bit more of a rules-based approach to investing in this very volatile sector.
By the way, when you talk about your overall approach, did I see correctly that the Nigerian brothers from CNBC, John and Pete, that they're strategic advisors to THCX, is that correct?
Yeah, John and Pete have been cannabis investors for many years. As the listeners may know, despite the fact that they're on CNBC, often in media personalities, both of them played in the NFL. Pete had a longer career, suffered many broken bones and I believe a broken back at some point, and it began using CBD products several years ago. So his interest in investing in the cannabis space was born out of usage of the product itself. And I've known the brothers for a couple of years just through the ETF industry. And, when we had filed to launch the fund, sort of mentioned to John and Pete, and they wanted to get involved. And so they really help us to, think about what's out there, what investment opportunities are out there in the space. They're always have their ear to the ground. They're speaking at a lot of conferences. They also have their own family office. So they're investing in, companies, a lot of private deals for the cannabis space. So they're just an unbelievable resource to have to be able to bounce ideas off of, for the fund. So they've been great partners so far.
We're visiting with Matt Markevich, Managing Director of the Cannabis ETF, ticker symbol THCX. Matt, let's talk about cannabis stocks themselves. So it's been a really tough year, especially since about March. And if you look at some of the bigger names, Canopy, Cronos, Tilray, they're down 50, 60, even close to 70%. What's your assessment here? What do you think's been going on?
Well, there are a multitude of reasons why the cannabis industry has been under pressure, since March, as you alluded to. First is there's a lot of high expectations coming into the year, especially up in Canada, where legalization happened in October 2018. So the analysts up in Canada had very high expectations for revenue growth, for many of these companies to become EBITDA or earnings positive this year. And what happened was that sales growth didn't materialize up in Canada. Part of it was there was a supply shortage. A lot of it had to do with the fact that not enough retail outlets were opened in the more populous provinces of Ontario and Quebec on a timely basis. So in essence, the product couldn't get to market to satisfy the demand of the customer. So a lot of those earnings expectations and the analyst estimates have had to come down over the course of the year. And as a result, their price objectives have come down with it. So it's been a bit of a disappointing year, although things are starting to firm up in Canada from a sales perspective. So we also have the introduction of edibles and distillates in December, so that should help to stabilize some of those sales numbers as well. We've also had a lack of, I'll call it, regulatory catalysts within the United States. There were two bills in Congress that there were high expectations that there were at least one of them was going to get passed this year, that being the STATES Act and the Safe Banking Act. We did see the Safe Banking Act pass the House of Representatives in a little over a month ago. It's in the Senate's hands right now. They're trying to get that through, passed in December. We'll see what happens there. But there wasn't also much chatter around legalizing cannabis on a federal level. So without that regulatory clarity here in the U.S., investors have been disappointed. And third, unfortunately, we've had this vaping crisis in the United States. And a lot of the illnesses and deaths have been associated with THC products as opposed to nicotine products. All those products have come from the black market, the illicit market, and we have seen a decline in vape sales since that kind of came about over the summer. Things are starting to rebound a little bit, but there was worry that it was going to push demand for cannabis-related products on the legal level down. Essentially, what's going to happen, in my view, is that it's going to push consumers towards the legal market because they want to have that, you know, assurance that the products are safer, that they know exactly what they're getting. Just like when you go to the store and you buy a bottle of alcohol, you know that what stands behind that brand, you can contact them if there's something wrong. Right now, for a lot of the vape cartridges in the United States, that doesn't exist because people are getting through the illicit market. So that, you know, the illnesses and the deaths have definitely helped to put a damper on sentiment in the cannabis market as well.
Matt, you mentioned supply. And I actually saw something on 60 Minutes, I think it was a few weeks ago, where they talked about how there's such an oversupply of marijuana. I believe this was in California, that they don't even know what to do with it all. And I think if you talk to somebody who doesn't believe in the cannabis theme, they always will say something like, hey, you can always grow more, right? And it comes back to the supply side. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, a lot of people, it's called weed for a reason because it is easy to grow. Right. To a certain extent, they're right. But if you are going to deliver a consistent quality product where consumers can expect the same experience after every usage, this isn't something that, you want to be buying from, some person who, lives in your neighborhood that they're growing in their backyard, which is why the branding, buying from legal markets, buying from established, reputable distributors and retailers is the way that the industry is transitioning. So there is, a good amount of supply, but a lot of it is not necessarily coming from legal means. And just like we have when let's take the farm industry, for instance. When you take an Aleve for pain management, you know that what that effect is going to be. Cannabis needs to work toward that sort of that same spot where you ingest or inhale whatever strain you may be ingesting, you expect to have that same experience all the time. And this is a new industry. This is an industry that's been operating in the shadows for decades, but it's new from the sense that it's finally coming into the legal light. And there are going to be some growing pains with that. And that's the reason why you've seen a lot of volatility in stocks, but also that's why you would probably are better served to invest in a diversified, liquid, and tax-efficient basket of cannabis stocks.
Okay, so on that note, what's the investment case moving forward? You mentioned, sort of the consumer education element. I always tend to think of this as obviously a regulatory play in many regards. If the regulatory environment changes, that obviously could be a catalyst to the space. But what's the investment case here?
Yeah, so you do have, the largest market in the world being in the U.S. You do have some regulatory catalysts that are on the horizon. You have public acceptance of legalizing cannabis, marijuana usage at all-time highs. meaning that the public is in favor of declassifying marijuana as a Schedule One substance. So that public perception movement is very important, especially in politicians' eyes. You also, you know, what I sort of want to get across to listeners is that marijuana is more, and cannabis is more than just a seed-to-sale story. Cannabis and phytocannabinoids are going to be used in nutraceuticals, supplements, pharmaceuticals. And you're investing, when you invest in a diversified portfolio, you're investing in that whole industry. So you're not, it's not necessarily just thinking about, oh, this is a smokable product and, you know, its growth solely relies on passage of federal legalization in the U.S. This is a global movement towards accepting and using cannabis as almost a flavoring and food ingredient. It's an ingredient that will be used across the globe as more societies accept and, you know, legalize the usage of cannabis over the next several years.
Matt, just a couple of minutes left here. Going back to the ETF, THCX, I believe you were the third marijuana ETF on the market, and there are now six total. So for investors who either want to play a rebound in this space, or perhaps they are believers in the cannabis theme longer term, what should be the evaluation process here? Obviously, you would like for everyone to look at THCX, but what do you think are some key factors as investors evaluate all six ETFs?
Yeah. Well, one is you want to look at the underlying basket liquidity. So the 37 stocks in THCX trade $850 million a day. So that's that what we call off-screen liquidity. So you want to make sure there's enough liquidity in that basket, right? I could point to all those stocks and say, here's their volume. So investors shouldn't be, you know, afraid to make outsized, trades. You also want to look at trading spreads in the ETF itself. How wide what's the difference between, you know, the bid and the ask of that ETF? Because, you know, outside of management fee, the total cost of ownership is determined by what you actually pay for that ETF, right? And when you're trading it. Most people fail to recognize that. So you really want to keep a look at how tight are those trading spreads. And then additionally, again, what are the rules that are going into, or how is the portfolio, you know, being decided on? Again, I could point to very specific, we have $100 million market cap minimum, we rebalance once a month, 8%, you know, I can very 8% limit per stock and spell that out very easily. So it's easy for investors to understand, like, how a lot of the stocks are getting, you know, chosen in the portfolio, why they're in there. So that's kind of what I would look for. I will say, though, on the whole, as a space, I want to leave listeners with, you know, two numbers. And this is really, to me, represents, you know, getting back to the growth that you cited. Right now, 7% of publicly traded cannabis market cap is owned by U.S. institutional investors. That compares to 80% of the Russell 3000 index being owned by U.S. institutions. So when U.S. institutional investors are going to be more allowed, shall we say, to invest in cannabis stocks, and a lot of them are just prohibited from doing so right now, there'll be a wall of money that will be coming into this space. I'm not saying it's going to happen all at once, but the money flows, the potential money flow that will, you know, that is out there is very significant. And a lot of investors who are listening to this podcast, they don't have too many opportunities to invest in publicly traded instruments, especially stocks, before institutions do. Cannabis represents a very interesting and attractive case because you are able to invest in cannabis stocks before institutions.
Well, Matt, best of luck with the ETF. Really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me again. Appreciate it.
That was Matt Markevich, Managing Director of Innovation Shares.